very much. Although that was it's really fascinating for me, these concepts, I'd like us both to think about these perhaps in terms of writing, but also in terms of music. Where would you, for instance, put free jazz on this scale? Where would you put Japanese reductionism? Where would you put serialism? Where would you put even 19th century romantic composition? I think that's very interesting. And then I would ask, maybe from conversations with Christian, what kind of writing is this graph? I think that's an interesting question. I would like to propose that there are ways for all of these things to be applied to music as well as to writing, and there's a real synergy there. The next thing that we're going to do, I think, is one of the ways, is a potential future route for music that does perhaps think beyond this graph. And maybe James would like to say, this is Gilliatt, James Whitehead. We're going to ask you now to take the headphones that we've given you. I remind you again that these have two channels which have one piece called Dasein, one piece called Reading Kant, and we'd encourage you to listen to them and walk around the tramway. Particularly, I think it's worth, given the content of the pieces, walking around in the garden. We're going to take half an hour to do that, but before you do so, I wonder if there's anything James wants to say.
I'd just like to say hi.
Hi, James.
I want to talk a bit about the piece when you come back in. When Barry approached me to do something, I thought, yeah, that sounds good. And then he picked out two pieces that I'd done that I thought were impossible to actually perform. And we had an exchange of emails where I kept suggesting things, and he sort of steered me slowly, keeping back to this. And he came up, a good curator, he came up with this idea that you're going to have now with the headphones, and I think it was Glenn's.
Actually, yeah, it was Glenn who did that, our project manager.
All goes wrong, you see, it's not my fault.
It's Glenn's.
But anyway, it actually excited me a bit, so we're trying it out, and really we'll see what happens. So when you come back in half an hour's time, I'm going to talk about it a bit, and I think you are as well.
Okay. I think so. So go and get a drink, wander about, stand in the garden, listen to these headphones and think about what you're listening to, if that's okay. Or I don't know, smoke a fag and do whatever you want to do. That's my suggestion. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Order. Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming back. Are you all seated? Okay, thanks for coming back. I'm not going to say much other than just to say hi to James again and get him to talk a little bit, and then I'm going to maybe talk depending on whether we think. I'm worried about the bit that I've written is a bit too dry, but let's start with James.
Okay, I've written things to say because I thought I had to or should or whatever. About five times so far, and that's what I've ended up with, which is just basically it's got Barry and Glenn written on in case I get too nervous and forget their names, which is terrible. The next sentence goes, when an artist makes a work of art, sometimes it's difficult for them to see exactly what they've done themselves. But then we have the question, am I saying this about me, and does that make me an artist? So I can address that question first of all. I've been doing, I'll call it stuff, it's a technical term, for, I don't know, 40 years or something. And sometimes it involves making sounds, sometimes it uses paint, whatever. And the first thing I had to get rid of, I suppose, is this title of artist, because what happens then is you think, I'll look in a book and see what artists should do, and I'll do that. And that leads to a brick wall. We'll come to that brick wall. We can do it now, in a way. And the brick wall is, I was a painter, there was a painter in the 1960s called Ad Reinhardt, and he did some paintings called Ultimate Paintings, which basically, if anyone's seen an Ad Reinhardt Ultimate Painting, they are just black. They're not just black, but, I mean, if you saw one and you didn't know it, it looks like a black 5-foot rectangle. Most people would ignore that. If you were a painter back in the 1970s, and you're into minimal art and the truth, and truth is beauty, and you see that painting, you go, shit, he's done it. He called them ultimate paintings because he was basically putting his two fingers up to other artists, because some artists are like that. And for a painter at that point, it more or less, I'm not saying painting's dead, if you wheeled on the 20-year-old me in this place now, he would say it definitely was dead. And he would say that people like Don Judd, Sol Witt, blah, 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 moved out of painting because we've learned that picture plane was flat. And I could go on about this too long, and some of you start to fall asleep. Let's cut, not to the chase, because Paris can do that. Why do I do what I do? I don't know. Would I do it on a desert island? Yes. And the two reasons I can think of, and I'm not saying these are true because I don't know. I did some philosophy, I'm a great fan of science, whatever. But the first thing is, and some people lose it, which is a shame, is children ask, why are we here? You'll have a conversation with anyone who's still got a childish mind about infinity, and at the end of space, is there a brick wall? I mean, the average five-year-old has these thoughts, and some of them never grow up and become, well, maybe artists, but certainly that's me. I mean, what I've asked permission for this, and I don't normally swear, but it's almost like having, let's have a day where everyone, say, at 12 o'clock, just shouts out, what the fuck's going on? Because that's philosophy in a nutshell. And there are various variations of that, and again, we could go on for a long time about that. But I mean, painters like Gauguin's, you know, what the fuck's going on, I think it's called, isn't it? But it sounds pretentious to be saying this to a bunch of people. And maybe it is. Sorry?
More pretentious to talk about it to a brick wall.
Yeah, okay. I don't answer back though, brick walls. So this piece of work that you've been listening to, there's a few things you need to know about it. First off, how and why I made it, I'm not sure. What it means, I'm still not sure. That doesn't mean to say I've not got some ideas, and they've changed all week as I've watched other artists' work. The reading camp is simple to say what happened. I went into a garden on a nice summer's day. I got a book out of that camp and started to read it. And you may have experienced the same phenomenon. I'd realised I'd read three pages and nothing had gone in. I'd listened to the birds singing and I just drifted. And what I was doing, I mean, you laughed because you experienced the same thing yourself, I hope. I was being, and that's something quite simple, but I think it's deep. And the problem is, when you start then to say, okay, I'm going to look at some philosophy about being, it gets very technical. And the first reaction is, I don't understand this. And the second one is, this guy's bullshitting. But if you bear with it, you can actually find out that maybe they're not. And it gets interesting. Let's go back to the reading camp. So what I did was, I thought I'd like to do what's known as a field recording. And if anybody knows what field recording is, they can switch off for the next bit. But briefly, as you go out of the microphone, you record ambient sound. There's lots of problems with that, technical problems like tape hiss, car noise, and it's not what you want. When you listen to it back, it's not what you want. Those of you that are into physics will know that something called the twin slit experiment. You can Wikipedia it if you're bored tonight. But it's really weird because what happens is it proves at a certain level that when you observe something, you alter it. You're all looking at me now. You've altered me. I'm a bit nervous. I'm sweating a bit. So you're not seeing me. How can you ever see me? And that starts to get deep, I think. And so what happened with the field recording was, it's always alive, but it's a recording of reality. So I abandoned that, and being perverse, I sat down and thought, right, I'll construct it. And now I'm feeling a bit like some uncle that's just told a sort of kid who's seven that there is no Santa Claus. Because what you've listened to wasn't a field recording. I constructed that over a series of weeks. The sounds have been manipulated and manufactured. There isn't a drama there. And when I'd finished it, and I think, I don't know the date, but I think it was about a year ago, I just left it on one side because I thought, I don't know what that is. But somehow it had a power. And then eventually, I decided to release it. And I did so. And it's a bit, again, this sounds a bit romantic. But it's a bit like letting something go and then waiting for the, what a load of crap, or that's brilliant, or the worst thing of all, I suppose, is the silence. Sorry about that, that's a bit romantic, I know. But basically, it's about being. It's about this act of being alive. And, you're going to talk about hiding, aren't you?
I'm
going to remind him, I'm sorry.
No, not at all. You've got all... carry on.
But what Barry was saying, I mean, Barry wrote to me and said he thought this work was like, did this, this and this, and I thought, wow, and he gave me a quote in it, and I thought, that sounds really cool, that quote. And he looked it up, and I realised he was quoting me. Is this smart? Yeah. Anyway, so the idea behind the piece, I spoke to my wife this morning, and she said, don't just stand up and make them laugh, but I can't help it. Because
I'm going to be really boring.
Okay, but it is a serious subject. I wrote the thing this morning at 5 o'clock, and I was feeling very black. I think what's run through, I wasn't going to say this, but I'm saying it now.
Okay, go for it.
What runs through this week in my mind, eventually, was nihilism. We can laugh about things, but can I be a bit black and party poop?
You don't have to ask me.
Oh, well, I'd like to.
We're all here.
Okay. And in nihilism is hard. And one of the things that we were talking about is that with Kurt Gödel, I'm pronouncing that wrong, I know, but it didn't matter. The incompleteness theorem, a lot of people think, oh, who gives a shit? But what it means two things to me as an artist. It means, first of all, you've got absolute freedom. And you think, wow, great. But then there's nothing to stop you doing whatever you want to do. So anything you do is okay. And that's a big, big curse. Anyone that's into, you know, French existentialism will realize that. And that's why it can become black at times. You face that problem of being. And so that's sort of involved in a way, as I see it now, in that particular work. But that's probably influenced by what happened this week. So the two important things I think you need to know, first of all, is that what you were listening to wasn't a field recording, it was a construct. One more thing and I'll shut up, I think. Where I got my idea to release it was, I'm not a mathematician, but I'm a fan of maths. I love all this Cantor stuff and infinities and all that. And in mathematics, they hit a similar, imagine the Ad Reinhardt black painting. It's a sort of limit. You can't go beyond it. You can't be more abstract without stopping painting. You could just decide it's a waste of time, but mathematicians had a problem. They like doing stuff. Glenn's a mathematician, so he can correct me, but they wanted to find out the square root of -1. I think I'm right there. And you can't do it because, isn't it time? 2 times minus is always a plus. Something like that. Whatever. What the mathematicians did, and we thought mathematicians as being like cool but logical, they said we can't create this number, so we'll imagine one. And when I read that, I thought, well, that's cheating. You know, that's getting on. But once they'd done that, they could progress. And what I see the Dasein being is probably, in my terms, a way of progressing beyond that wall, that barrier of, and let's look at what the Ad Reinhardt is. It's a barrier of, this is the truth. A painting is a painting is a painting. And what we've been doing this week is looking at stuff like that and saying, there's more than one truth. There are lots of them. There's more than one zero, there's lots of them. And I think what that gives you is a little bit of what I've been thinking about. Not that coherent, because I'm vague contradictions in there, but we can get beyond that barrier that says, you know, you can't do this. The problem is we can't rely on the old God. If we go that way, you can't rely on, you know, the instruction book, because we, you know, look at yourself. There isn't the instruction book of what to do, and so okay, we can have a good time, but also there are some sort of deep things in there. I'd like you to talk a bit about Heidegger and stuff, because
okay,
I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
You know, but that's where it's bad, and don't be fooled by the fact that Heidegger is, I find, very difficult to read. But what he's going on about is very basic stuff, and if you pick bits out, like he'll talk about a Van Gogh boot painting of shoes, boots, old boots, and what he says is that they're not just like a pair of shoes. He imagines I think it's the woman that walked the field cold and doing all that stuff and the mud's on the boot, and that's what he saw being as at one level. So he's interested, he's very, very, although it gets technical, he's interested in something that really affects every single living person. Yeah? Am I right? Mm. So I'm asking him, am I right? And he's saying yes, so I feel good now. But I shouldn't do that. Isn't that wrong? He's going to answer that. Sorry, I put him on the spot. Do you want to say something?
Right, okay, so, yeah, so I...
And can we have to just have a chat with them?
Yeah, that would be great, yeah. You, can we have a chat,
us.
I think, is the...
Yeah.
So stand up here, Phil, because I feel really nervous now doing all this really dry stuff. So some of, I think James has just given a really lovely human kind of discussion of that piece. I want to try and like really mechanically explain how I understand it, because I think I'm possibly quite boring in this sense. In order to do that, I've written an emergency glossary to remind myself of what all of the terms, some of the terms that James has been talking about are. You may know what all of these words mean already, but I'm just going to talk them through because it helps me to construct a kind of argument. I wish I could do things off the cuff, but I'm not so good. So, emergency glossary for Gilliatt. Ontix, the word ontix. Ontix. In the world, there are things. That's what ontix means. We could say that there is a sewing machine, an umbrella, a dissecting table. Ontology. There are things in the world that know they are things. You, me, Martin Heidegger, James... I'm trying. Metaphysics is the investigation of the relations these things bear to one another using notions by which people understand the world, including existence, objecthood, property, space, time, causality, and possibility. Dasein. Dasein is philosopher Martin Heidegger's famous concept that to supersede metaphysics and to replace ideas of subject, object, consciousness, the world. Heidegger says that Dasein is how we encounter things in the world, which is to say that is a concept of how we, you, me, Heidegger, things that know they are things, project ourselves into the possibilities that lie before us. It is an interpreting and understanding the world in terms of possibilities. I'm going to skip out the messes because we talked about that earlier. The uncanny is a Freudian concept of an instance where something can be familiar yet foreign at the same time, resulting in a feeling of it being uncomfortably strange. That's closely related to déjà vu, which I suppose is superficially an uncanny recognition. We've talked about field recordings. So the question when I listened to the Dasein and reading Kant pieces is something like this. How do you go about, as an artist, representing something non-representational, like Dasein, which is a second-order concept and is abstract, in that it tries to capture the way in which we encounter the world, the relationship between all things as understood by a person in the world? Is this okay so far? Yeah? Maybe via a kind of an interpenetration of subject, object, consciousness and the world into each other. So, in asking you to wear these headphones and to listen to the pieces Dasein and reading Kant whilst walking about the tramway and particularly the hidden gardens out the back, we have hoped that to create a subjective experience in that it creates a kind of spectator's distance between what you're looking at and what you could be hearing, a real garden outside, and what you are hearing, a completely fictional construction of a false garden. What is a recorded bird? What is a real bird? How do I experience them? I think this is ontology, things that know they are things. You, me, Heidegger, the fact that we know that there is a bird there. So that's subjective. Object. What you're hearing is a fictional object, which sounds almost identical to an untreated, bland, even, or boring field recording of something like a garden or a kind of an estuary or something. It could, to all intents and purposes, be a simple recording of a garden, but it's not. It's a representation of something that is non-representational, an object that perhaps tries to be representation, to be a representation of unobjectifiable transcendence. This is ontics, I think. In the world, there are things. In altering material by organising it unchanged, Dasein, the piece, is an organised area of unchanged elements, neither successive nor additive, there is no result or sum. It is in this way, hopefully, uncanny. And this idea of the uncanny is the means by which James inserts consciousness directly into the piece Dasein, the way he makes consciousness part of the material of the work. He tells us, I've written this as if he weren't here and I was giving a lecture, it's really stupid. He tells you it is a fiction and implicitly asks you to think about that. It is a reality that any art as a cultural activity with a tradition and conventions, an activity that does not perform in a vacuum, but which necessarily interacts with culture, politics, commerce and sociality, constitutes and is constituted by a vast meaning-making structure. We say that the meaning, if any, of this work, hang on, I need to read that. I would say that the meaning, if any, of this work of James's will be constructed via this work as a social collective experience in an arts venue paid for by public funds, etc. and so on, by an awareness of how it sits within a world of which you are thrown into tonight. Heidegger would say, I think, that Dasein, who finds itself, Dasein is kind of used like to replace me or I or you, Dasein is often talked to as if it's a person, finds itself thrown into the world amidst things and with others, is thrown into its possibilities, including the possibility and implications of our own actions, which I think James was talking about. So, in doing all of the above, I think that those pieces, Dasein and Reading Kant, ask you to undertake the kind of second-order abstract conceptualising of being in the world that would lead somebody to come up with a concept like Dasein in the first place. That's my point, that it gets you to do something, this shifting of attention between something that's real, something that's fictional, something that's been constructed for you, something that is a possibility of real, not knowing whether what you're listening to is a bird or a real bird or a fictional bird that's been constructed. Is it that bird over there that we were talking about, or is it a generic bird, any bird that's been recorded? I think this is like analogous to the process of conceptualising being in the world. So in listening to Dasein, while other things are happening tonight, you're walking about, you're in the garden, Craig or Christine are performing, I'm worrying at the back about having to talk about Heidegger, you might find yourself considering your, I've actually ripped this off from an email that Jared Fowler sent me, this last line, you might find yourself considering your non-relations to this fiction, and this consideration might re-throw these non-relations. In this way, I think Dasein and Reading Kant go beyond the traditional ways in which experimental music is constructed by encouraging you to undertake a process analogous to one way suggested by a famous philosopher, which we can all have lots of problems with, Heidegger's very problematic, a way in which we exist in the world, something which is normally well beyond the purview of music as representation or as entertainment. And my real point, and although the graph's gone, but I think this is an attempt to think poetry. Like, I think, Christian, you'd be right in saying that you consider this graph to be an act of conceptual writing, or that conceptual writing...
Well, people ask me, where is conceptual writing placed on that graph? I say, it is the graph.
I think that's a way of thinking writing. You could say, I think that we should be engaged in a project of thinking music. And so I would say, you could say that this is a music of thinking, or maybe is an attempt to think music. That's all the notes that I wrote down. I hope
that
some of that makes sense.
I underlined that because...
The last bit, yeah.
I thought that was good.
Can I say that again?
Yeah.
You could say that it's a music of thinking, or maybe an attempt to think music.
Thanks.
Good enough.
Have any thoughts about any of that?
Can we get the lights up a little bit on everyone?
just shout out, because I can't, still can't really see MD, so just there.
I'm wondering if there, what the rationality behind the decision to not tell us beforehand about this you know, trick that you played on us, and maybe if it was not necessary.
I thought very carefully about that, I would say that, wouldn't I? I don't think I played a trick on you, unless you think that Santa Claus is a trick.
I'll say like this trick, this fact that it's,
okay.
It's not really.
It was because I wanted that. I thought, how if I just said, oh, this is what it is, and this is a gamble on my part, because when you do a piece, I try and keep the audience out of it as much as possible. It was a case of, I wanted that flip where in your mind you were thinking, I'm listening to a field recording, and then suddenly you realise it's not a field recording. And I don't want to use the word fake, because I don't think it is a fake. It's
a fiction.
It's a fiction. I mean, what, difficult. I've known people, and I won't mention names because they're not here anyway, so that have read things like Zarathustra or Sartre as a novel, and miss the philosophical thing, and I think that's okay. What I wanted to do is have that sudden things. What we've been doing all this week is about, I think, is saying you can think something's true, but it might not be. That I'm getting to it now. That's the heart of it. And the idea is that you can think something's true, and then someone can say something, and it cannot be. Now I'm in a very nice situation here now. Thanks for the question. I'm just realising this. Because I could now say, aha, it was a field recording, gotcha. And then you go, oh, and then I could say, aha, yes, you see, now you're going to go away now, you won't know what it was. You know, you can ask me. You can ask me what I intended by it, but you know, I could lie, but I could also be wrong. You know, I mean, I don't. There's a lot of we could get very bogged down in sort of the author's intention and the intention fallacy, and you know. But it's basically the film with the two the notes, the lover. How can you trust someone who you're living with? And when people start to say, do you love me? And the answer is yes. That's usually a sign of some breakdown occurring.
That's struck a nerve for a particular member of our audience.
That's the real world we're living in. I mean, and I think, you know, that's the world. Have I answered the question yet?
Can I say something about that as well? Yeah. I think that what really got me when actually Jared, who performed the Killer Tim Notion and who's here, gave me a copy of Dasein, that the piece was that it, without, I didn't read the notes that come with it, and I thought it was really important to like I often don't read the introduction. I normally read the introduction to a book after I've read bits of the book or something. So I think that the important thing about that work for me, and this is just one man's opinion, is that it tries to set up a mental state or a way of thinking which is analogous to the process that may lead you to experiencing, like coming to terms with an idea like Dasein. So I think that to explain it in advance robs it of the possibility of you getting into that mental state of kind of reflection. I think reflection's a dodgy word within art or something, but I think to read into it and go, oh right, okay, now I have to try and think about a mental state which is maybe a little bit like Dasein as explained by thousands and thousands of words in Being and Time, I think that robs it of any kind of possibility of ever achieving that. It's my opinion. So I think that, you know, and often we go to art events or films or something and we want to know, and we've read a review in advance or we have the album, and we want to know things before, we want to know what we're getting. But I think that everything that we've tried to do this weekend, maybe, is to present things that might have no proper response to them or that you might not be able to. If you come in and know, have an expectation, and that expectation is fulfilled, then I'm not really sure that that's artistic. I think that that's something else. That's sating a desire. I think that's entertainment or something.
So. Well, I should follow my question by the statement that I think it was the right decision. I think it was, yeah.
It's an odd word to use, true, isn't it?
Sorry?
You know, surely if it's music, then both things are true. You said earlier that about you use the word true or truth.
I use
the constructed piece is true as well. It's
could
a bit
be.
Like Magritte's painting, isn't it? You know,
it could be. That's the whole point. I mean, I think that the problem with what we call it modernism, it was looking for the, it is, everyone does this these days, the truth, you know, it's the big deal, and the great work of art. And I did a version of your Godel thing, which is the faithful wife.
Uh-huh.
You know, Hilbert has a really, it has to be male, female in this way, because Hilbert was male, I think.
David Hilbert, a famous German mathematician.
Yeah, right. And my version of the incomplete is fair. Right. Okay. Hilbert's a mathematician in love with mathematics, and he thinks it's true, fundamental love that will last forever, that he could depend on. Right. He has a friend called God, and he asks the friend, or he boasts. You can elaborate the story yourself about his wife being true and fundamentally to the end of time. Their love will last. Godel takes his wife out, comes back the following day. I'm really, really spoiling
it. Brilliant, it's great.
Comes back the following day and says, "Well, no, she's not faithful. She's a slut. And she likes it." And that sounds awful. But to mathematicians, that's what they had to face. They wanted their mathematics to be pure and chastened, and it would do anything for them. All they had to do is write the rules down and they'd follow it. She'd follow it. I mean, I'm saying she and I'm being female, male there, but you can reverse it. But that's my take on that.
I think a thing about truth, about like that experience maybe, also is that if you're stood in the garden out there and you're listening to the field recording that has little birds playing and stuff, there's a first order and second order truth to those things. If you're listening to a bird that is actually there, and there's also a bird on the headphones, then when I've experienced that, I'm kind of starting to think which is the real bird and which is a true individual bird, which I can see that bird over there, that specific black bird, and which is the bird that I'm listening to, which has been constructed and therefore is only ever a generic bird. So one of them is perhaps a true bird, but it's generic, and one of them is a true bird because there it is. And I think that that's a switch between ontics and ontology, I think, that happens in that piece. I think is the big words.
And the other thing is we've got this hang up on the word truth. You see, and other philosophers have said, well, why is the big deal about being true?
But is it not when you actually say truth, you almost actually construct something?
Yeah.
It's almost like truth's the most fake word, really, like, in that it, you know, it sort of tries to capture something and sum it up. But the problem is, you can't really sum up things in that kind of bracketing, really.
Like. Yeah, and when you say something's true, implicitly you're making somebody else false. You see, you're saying I'm right, you're wrong.
Some of this is reminding me of, I've recently got this author, B.S. Johnson, you know him? But he's sort of like an experimental writer from he committed suicide in the 70s, but he wrote a book that was unbound, but no, it was unbound, it only had the first and last page were numbered. And he tries to write quite authentic kind of books, he always tries to undermine it at the end. Because he sort of says that storytelling is basically just lying anyway, like, as a kind of what kids, it's like a kid's game kind of thing. And, you know, I don't know, there's a sort of comedy in some way. I think the truth's almost like a comedy more than it's like a sort of objectivity, if you see what I mean.
Got it.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me,
Mr. Whitehead,
could you please explain this piece's relation to New Age music and neo-religious
thought? There is not one.
Do you think there's one?
I think you have to be very careful in I'll talk a bit more about zeros in the next bit, and you've got to be very careful about spirituality, because we can make nihilism into something mystical and good, but if you start to read Nietzsche, who has phrases that are wonderful, but he abandons the truth as a philosopher. Interestingly, he sees truth as a woman as well, so that's a whole lot of issues there.
Which I don't think we've got time
for. No, we haven't, sorry.
No, I don't mean that, I just mean Nietzsche's relationship with women might be difficult to unpack. I'm sorry.
Anybody?
Any other questions? Or actually, we are, in order to try and keep to a thing, like a couple of questions? Or, oh no, Glenn's like totally waving at me and saying that we have to.
Oh,
Neil, have you got one question?
It wasn't so much a question, it was just to say that when I was walking around the garden listening to the two pieces of music, there was quite a lot of interference.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel about how that may or may not have affected or affected the piece and how that relates to the kind of conversation that you're having at the
moment. Well, the phrase is shit happens, and I could have just said no. I won't allow that because it could interfere with the whole piece and ruin it. But I think you have to put up with the fact that whenever you try and make anything, it will never be perfect. And I apologise for that. But that's why it's nice to talk now. And
I'm not saying that.
Yeah, I mean, if you go onto Gerald's website, Google Gerald Fowler, he's got the two pieces there in MP3. You can download them, and that it's quite good to put on actually in your home, and you really do get that. Is that bird outside? If you've got a good stereo here, yeah.
Just following up with the idea of the interference, we've the way that this piece is being talked about, it doesn't seem that we've talked about the fact that at least for myself, I wasn't really listening to it very much. I was actually mostly wandering around and just joking with my friends and stuff. I was wondering what you thought about this if you thought about the issue of like whether people would actually pay any attention to either of the pieces at all. You kind of joking about going for a smoke earlier, and that's kind of part of what's going on. But I'm kind of fascinated by the ontology of music, because where does music exist? Where does any piece exist? Does it exist in some sort of vacuum on its own? But when you put it into some sort of lived context, whether it's this or whether putting on the stereo at home, it seems to become something entirely different because of that necessary sort of the sociable nature or something. So I wondered how you felt about that, and whether you saw the conversations that were going to go around the piece and sometimes completely occlude it, whether you felt those were things you wanted to embrace or problems to be negotiated or things to try and be
I think I'd embrace them. I think the idea that you were saying that you ignored the piece.
Well, not ignored.
I've lost the thread there, but I think the important thing, you use the word music, and the first off is, we could go on too long there, but in the first instance, is a field recording music? You could say, no, it's not, because it's not deliberate. Is that piece that I've just done music? Yes, it is, because it was ordered and orchestrated. But then we have the problem, you don't know that's true. So you might be saying, oh, it's just a field record. And that's what I think. I mean, I can't answer your question, because I don't know, this is why art's brilliant, because you don't, I'll use the word art and music, and what you can do is you get bogged down into defining what the word art and music is, and you stop doing whatever it was. So let's ignore that. And I think, yeah, the fact that you, whatever your experience of it was, and it's not a cop-out, because we're talking about it now, and I'm certainly not going down the road that whatever you make of it is okay by me. No, it's not. The reason I release it is, if you think about it a bit, and if we can share a common thought, I think that basically is good. I'm not terribly sure about that, and I could just stop, sending stuff out. But I had a very black thought, very black, 5 o'clock. I'll go for it. It's like we're all in a cancer ward. I mean, I walked down Socky Hall Street, and you're looking at moving skeletons in a few years' time, aren't you? And that's, I know, silly romanticism, but that's what I think that's what we're about. We're about saying, can we talk about this and sort of, not sort it out, because I don't think we can, but just start to talk about it. Not answered your question, sorry.
I think, sadly on that, we've got to move on to the next part of the team. just to give everybody time to do what they were going to do. So James, thanks very much. And,